The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on the Nova Society are those of our guests and panel members and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of any institution any member of the Nova Society is associated with. The material information presented on the Nova Society is for general information purposes only. Reproduction or dissemination for the purpose other than education is prohibited without express written consent of the Nova Society. We'd like to welcome everyone back to the Nova Society, and today, again, we reach into the mailbag, and we will be discussing critical thinking, and the listener is asking us about critical thinking, and can critical thinking be better taught in the lower grades before university, and is this doable, and is this the reason, the fact that it is not being taught, is this the reason that it seems like in the United States, critical thinking is becoming a lost art? So let's listen in. I love the mailbag. In fact, I think what I'm going to be doing
saves you a lot of work, doesn't it?
Don't have to think of nothing. But I'm going to start taking out excerpts and sending it to everybody so that you can get prepared for what we got. But this is another one. This is another one, and it was talking about critical thinking skills. And it was talking about critical thinking skills in the United States seems to be at an all-time low. Now, you mentioned, Scott, and it kind of goes with this a little bit, that teaching critical thinking skills in the grade schools, teaching those. In a grade school, wouldn't that cause more disruption if you've got students that use critical thinking skills? Because let's face it, it's not like when you come to university where we want you to be a free thinker, or we hope you're going to be a free thinker. In grade school, we want you to be a good little Johnny and sit there and do. We don't want you to use too many. We want, of course, I went to Catholic school. Those nuns didn't care what your opinion was. They didn't really care. All they want, you're going to sit there, you're going to listen, you're going to do what you're told. Can we develop critical thinking skills in the lower grades that does not disrupt the lower grades, but promotes better critical thinking skills as you become adults? Is that even doable? We're all educators. We should be able to answer that one.
I mean, at the end of the day, though, what is key behind critical thinking is curiosity, right? And being willing to ask the questions and explore new ideas. And yes to all the things. However, something happens along the way and kids just get slapped down for being curious. Especially neurodivergent kids or even people who just for whatever reason don't fit a specific box, they get slapped down. And so the people who are nurtured, that critical thinking skill gets nurtured into, are the people who do fit the box, so they become, the people that, are the top of their class. They're the ones that the teachers are writing letters of recommendation for, and everyone else, well, sucks to be you. I hope you figure it out. And then those are the ones who get to college and then they're floundering because we're like, hey, you should have learned this critical thinking muscle. You should have developed it when you were younger, and oh, well, sorry you didn't. So catch up quick. I mean, it is really one of those system complexities, where we are stacking the cards in favor of a certain elite and making everyone else have to fight for it.
I just wish they'd come out of grammar school and grade school and high school knowing that a quadruple negative is not a way to write. that would be truly to me a step forward. Brooklyn, what are you thinking? Can we teach this in the schools and do it effectively and actually create a better society this way, or are we kind of stuck with what we got?
I would say yes. I don't think it's going to happen. I was remembering the differences in when my daughter went to eighth grade in Toronto versus going to school here, and the approaches to school where the questions were mostly, you know, true or false, black or white, or multiple guess, where answers were rigid and there was no room for flexibility or anything like that. And among the first questions that I had to answer was an essay on whether or not there would ever be a just war. And she won a distinguished student award for being unafraid to express her opinion in essay writing. And it was just a very, very different environment. So I think, yes, I mean, the teacher would have to stop teaching to the test and start answering or asking questions, what questions, how questions, and things like that. And I think I already talked about this, how my grandson was corrected by his teacher when he said that the teacher said that deer never eat meat. And my grandson said, oh, yes, they do. And the teacher chastised him in front of the entire class. And he got very upset. And he told his mother about it. And his mother was the one who told him that deer do, in fact, eat bone marrow and things like that on occasion. And she went in there and she talked to the teacher and told the teacher that the teacher was wrong and that the teacher should not be calling out an autistic child in front of the class and that the teacher had better know her stuff before she speaks about it and makes a correction when of which she's obviously ignorant. And the teacher said, okay, we're going to go talk to the principal. And my daughter-in-law said, yeah, I'll walk you right down there. And the teacher got in trouble. So, I mean, the teachers are so used to teaching that to the test that I'm not sure that what is being taught in education degrees is I remember my late partner complaining about that, saying you know, these master of education, and I don't even know if it was a doctor of education that he was objecting to. He said the number of credits in these degrees is so minute that it just can't possibly be really worth that much, and they're just not robust enough. And he was horrified about the impact on the students. And when he was teaching himself, he noticed that many teachers, including math teachers, sat in their chairs the entire time. And he said, "How can you possibly teach math when you're not getting out of your chair?" And it just, it was for him, he was very disillusioned. And he loved teaching English. He loved teaching grammar. And when he was done, those kids knew their stuff if they cared to pay attention. So it really also depends on what the teachers themselves are being taught. And so, yeah, our system would have to change. And by the time people get to graduate school,
what percentage of the country is that, Brooke?
I don't really know.
Do you think it's 5%?
No, I don't know, but I know that about 2% have PhDs. So I don't know how many people actually have a master degree. Okay.
The rest of them are all ABD.
So just a couple of things. Like, I shouldn't say obviously. I hope it would be obvious that the best thing for a young student is a good teacher. And I think that we probably don't do a good enough job training teachers to be good teachers. One of the things that they need to learn how to do is listen to students and ask questions that are good questions so that the students can talk. I remember, you know, when you're in grade school, you read a paragraph and then it says, there's a question, you know, what was this paragraph? Which of these describes what the paragraph is about? And there's three or four choices and, you know, you have to choose. And they just say right or wrong, you know, yeah, X or check. And instead of that, it might be better for them to say, can you tell me why you say that this is the answer, and have a dialogue with students? Now, that's hard to do when you're in a classroom with 30 kids or 25 kids, you know, anything probably more than 8 or 9. And so one of the problems that we have, of course, is that we don't spend enough money on education. We don't have enough teachers. We need more early childhood teachers and through grade school teachers. They should all be funded the same way, so there's not disparities due to property taxes and how good a neighborhood is and all that kind of thing, which is an unfortunate, actually not just unfortunate, criminal thing that we do. Now, as an example, I think I may have mentioned this once before. I grew up in inner city Brooklyn, or at least a edgy neighborhood on the edge of Brooklyn, maybe not so inner. And my kids grew up here in the woods of Connecticut in a very kind of ritzy town for the most part. And I got a better education, I think, than they did. And I think there are a couple of different reasons for that. I think we had big classes. There were classes that in high school, for example, where I sat on the windowsill because they didn't have a desk for me. And we had, you know, we had the end of the baby boom. So we had a lot of kids in our neighborhood. And the second part of it, by the time I got to high school, I got a good education in a really bad high school, like a high school that no longer even exists. They actually broke it up into, I think, 7 or 8 different magnet schools because the school itself was just too big and unwieldy in 1974. Before I got there, there were 7,000 students in that school, which is bigger than the college I teach in now, which has campuses all, you know, 2 campuses, and they're all over the place. This was one building with 3 stories in, and 7,000 students in there. It was across the street from 2 different projects. The doors were wide open all the time. Anybody who wanted to go in that building could go in that building at any time, day or night. And a lot of people did who weren't students there. And there was a lot of trouble, you know. But we had great teachers. And one of the reasons we had great teachers, believe it or not, is the Vietnam War. Because our teachers were men who would have gone into professions like lawyers and doctors and businessmen and so on. But because they wanted to stay out of the war, teachers got a deferment, so they went into teaching instead. And they were still there, even though the war was over by the time I got to high school. They were still teaching there. And they were like really, really good teachers and great role models for young men and so on and so forth. And really did emphasize like thinking for yourself. I mean, it was that time in our country's history where people were really interested in thinking for themselves. And my kids, you know, have had, I think, fairly lame teachers for the most part, from what I can tell. Some nice people, but not particularly inspirational people who stimulate a lot of thought. So I guess my point here is that, you know, I believe in the discipline of learning at a young age. I believe that the best thing to do would be to teach them how to read phonetically, the old-fashioned way. Dick and Jane, that whole thing, and then turn them loose in a library and let them figure out what they want to learn on their own and you know, and help them do that. They need a little bit more guidance. There are a lot of distractions, obviously. It's not as, I can't even read a book anymore because every time I'm reading a book, I think of something, stimulates a little thought, and I go, I could look that up. And I end up going online, and next thing I know, 10 hours later, you know, I'm still online and I haven't gotten back to the book yet. So there are a lot of distractions, and it's hard for young people to stay with a book. But that really would be great. And then as they get older, Mark, you teach them more and more critical thinking type things so that they know shit from Shinola and can judge for themselves. And that's really the big thing that we're missing right now. I mean, when you're in the United States of America and somebody says, you know, we need a dictatorship here, there's something really wrong with this country. And I think that education would be a big antidote for that going forward.
To your point, I just wanted to, what you said, Scott, about going into the library. One of the research that I am learning about, because I'm back in school myself, as I've said, getting my second master's in English literature. Research apparently has shown that people who read literature are more empathetic than those who do not. And I thought, oh, well, maybe that's why I'm so empathetic, because growing up, I didn't have a TV and all I did was read. So I was reading university level books when I was 7, 8 years old, and because that's what I had to do. And I think that that may be one huge problem that people are not reading and have not developed that empathy, that compassion, and being denied books and having books burned and classics and things like that, that's going to cause even more loss than even I had been previously aware. So Scott, to your point, to let a person loose in a library, that was my favorite time in school, when we would go to the library. Even though my mother and I had like 1500 books at home, we had an entire wall full of shelf after shelf, and we went to the public library also. But still, library time was my favorite in school. Allowing the child free choice and making sure they read, and no phones. It's as you say, when people say, yeah, we need a dictator, and that people don't want to engage in democracy, and they really don't know who the candidates are, and they don't know anything about the issues. And it becomes very concerning. It becomes very concerning.
I don't want to out nerd you. I'm not sure I can, but I can try. When I was a kid, we used to go to my relative's house, I think every week for dinner. And they had I had a cousin who was older than me. And I used to run up to his room, grab his history book, and read his history book. And I was reading high school history books when I was a little kid. And I was well ahead of most of the kids in my class when it came to that particular subject, just because it interested me.
I'll take one more than that. I read the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Mm. Okay.
In elementary school.
Mark, you going with the phone book? Memorize the phone book?
No, and actually, here's the terrible thing. I don't think I can out-nerd you guys.
I spend all this time watching I Dream of Jeannie.
I was more a Star Trek person myself. And Dark Shadows, of course, had to watch that. But I was an athlete. In high school, I was an athlete, believe it or not. I used to have the body of a god, Thor. Now I have the body of a god, Buddha. So that's kind of how that works with me. I read a lot. There was no doubt. And, you know, Priscilla has already said to me once, when I die, I have to will my library to her, all my books that I have here. She has insisted. Of course, the guy, the
Encyclopedia Britannica, Mark.
Everything but the Encyclopedia. Yeah, because obviously I could just leave that out. The guy across the street, his attitude is, if I die, I have to leave him all my tools. So yeah, everybody's got a piece of me in some way or another. And I guess, you know, I'm listening to this, and I totally agree. First of all, let me say this: I think teachers are the most important people in society. They can shape society. I don't think we pay teachers even nearly enough. I truly do not. I think we should pay teachers like Uku bucks, because they truly do shape our society. My thing is that, and I remember back, and I'm sure each one of us could probably relate to this. Maybe, you know, I don't know. If one of my teachers said something to my parents, they believed that's all they believed. My defense was not taken into consideration. The teacher said this. The teachers are always right. And, you know, that's the way it is. And as all of us as educators who teach understand, there has to be a hierarchy in that, in a classroom. I always say, if you want to go in university, if you want to be treated like a customer, go talk to advising. They'll treat you like a customer. Or talk to admissions. They'll treat you like a customer. In here, you're a student. And that does not mean we're always warm and fuzzy in here. That means that you're not always going to be comfortable here. That means you're not always going to be happy with what you're going to hear in here. But when you get into the grade schools now, where you've got parents that can truly cause a teacher to lose their job because they taught something that parent, who is probably right on the level of imbecile, feels is inappropriate or wrong. And because we're treating parents like the customer, and the customer's always right, and administration is doing that, how can you be an effective teacher today in today's United States? That, and with 4 minutes left, that'll probably be a great topic for another podcast. How do, with the society the way it is and the culture the way it is, how do we make teachers, how do we protect one of the greatest assets to our country from the land of the stupid? And that really is what we're looking at. Oh, go ahead, Priscilla.
You know what would probably help is, like you said, making it a lucrative job, something that, you know, you can actually live off of and not have to have 14 other gigs just to get by. But this weird thing about emergency certification, where you can basically walk in off the street and prove you have a bachelor's degree, take a test and get certified, is not helping the image of teachers being anything other than a transactional, you know, customer-based environment, you know? So we need to also change our entire concept of like who a teacher is, and we stop certifying people on the fly just because we're desperate. We wouldn't be desperate if we paid them properly.
Did you have to take a teaching course?
Nope.
See, I
have the option to be a TA either. So when I fell into the classroom, I was making that shit up as I went along.
Okay. Because I remember we had one. Yeah, I know Brooklyn took it. I think Scott, probably you took it.
I took two education courses at Albany when I went there. One was about society, like the sociology of education, which was scary. And the other was, I think, about mastery learning, which was kind of a fun course that everybody got an A in because of mastery learning.
There you go.
and
yeah, it'd be kind of hypocritical if you didn't.
Right. You either got an incomplete or an A. That was his whole thing. Teddy Bear was the guy's name, believe it or not. And Theodore Bear, Dr. Theodore Bear, Teddy Bear. And he was. When I graduated college, there was a teacher shortage in Brooklyn, in New York. And so they gave 5-year temporary licenses. I taught high school for 4.5 years, I think, on that license, and then left it. I left just before it ended because I wanted to go try something else. But that's how I got my start in teaching, was just those six. All you needed was 6 credits of education, and you can get it. You can apply for a temporary license, take a test, and go.
Yeah, it's amazing. It truly is amazing. I know here in South Carolina, we have a teacher shortage. I teach at 2 universities, but I am not qualified to teach a high school class, which is kind of, you know, because I don't have the certification. Right. And no, South Carolina, I am not going to pay $2,500 to go get the doggone thing. I mean, there's just no incentive there for me to do it. Plus, I'd have to show up. And I, you know, that just sounds like a bad idea. Guys, always good talking to you. We will catch you again next week.
See everyone. Enjoy the rest of your conference, Priscilla.
Thank you.
Yes, enjoy.
So that's all the time we have for today's episode. The Nova Society is a production of the Phoenix Research Institute. We'd like to thank our sponsor for this episode, the Journal of Interdisciplinary Conflict Science. The JCIS is an open journal for upcoming scholars. The JCIS is currently accepting article submissions on an ongoing basis. The JCIS is a publication of Nova Works, a scholarly depository at Nova Southeastern University. A link to the journal is in our description. We'd also like to thank our podcast partners, Buzzsprout, who hosts the Nova Society, Audacity, who is our editing partner, and Podkite, who does all of our analytics. We'd also like to thank iHeartRadio, where people get their music and podcasts, Apple iTunes, the largest source for music and podcasts on the internet, Spotify, the most popular source for the Nova Society. The Nova Society is available on all these and other quality platforms mentioned in our description. We'd also like to thank our listeners. Without you, the Nova Society would not be possible. If you have a comment, a question, or would like to be a guest on the Nova Society, we can be reached at nova.society.podcast@gmail.com. Always remember, the power of society is knowledge. So for Dr. Scott Gershwer, Dr. Brooklyn Ann Weldon, Dr. Priscilla Hobbs, and all of us here at the Nova Society, I'm Dr. Mark Bound. Be well, and we hope to see you again next time.